You are listening to Mark Hatmaker Rough and Tumble Raconteur. This is a grab bag of old school Western martial arts, resurrected indigenous ways and empirical musings tinged with a heavy dose of respect, admiration, let's call it hero worship, for these hosses of yore. Hey crew, this is Mark Hatmaker coming to you from the Comancheria. Today, let's talk about dirty fighting. Let's talk about how to foul early 1920s style. And basically, we can also call this boxing's dirtiest fights. The top 10. Actually, it'll be a two-part episode. We'll run through maybe the top five here, at least top five according to my eye here. A big tip of the hat to boxing journalist Don Stradley for pointing me to some of his favorites. And I can get my own eye on it and figure out which ones really, really appealed to me. And also let you know some of the inspiration for some of the stuff in our most recent Black Box Volume, which is called How to Foul, Street Boxing, 1920 style. Let's see, to give you a flavor for how dirty things can get, a reporter once asked a welterweight Fritzy Zivic to comment on his reputation as a dirty fighter, and Zivic's response was kind of blunt. He said, "You're fighting, you're not playing the piano." Now, Zivic fought during the 30s and 40s, but he would have fit in just fine in the earlier era when London prize ring rules provided just a slight buffer between fighters and kind of civility there. There was that famous bout of the 19th century, the 1860 contest between John C. Heenan and Tom Sayer, held at Farnborough, England, that ended with Heenan strangling Sayer until Bob runs into the ring to break them up. There's tons and tons of wonderfulness pre the Marquis of Queensberry rules, and there's still lots of meanness that goes on afterwards. This is on up into 18, whenever New York welterweight Johnny Reagan used the spikes on his shoes to cut into his opponent's legs. Fighters were stopped wearing spike shoes soon after Reagan's time, but they still find other ways to cheat. And this using the spike shoes actually is very much similar to what you find in corking or caulking. Some people pronounce it that way, but it's actually corking, even though it's spelled C-A-U-L-K-I-N-G. Which is very common in lumberjack fights, and much more on that to come because we've got even more material that we've unearthed in that area. Let's move on to a round, though, a fight that's particularly mean, in my opinion. Let's talk about Jack Johnson versus Fireman Jim Flynn, July 4th, 1912. And, of course, the heavyweight championship bout was there's just no sportsmanship going on whatsoever. It's a New Mexico State police had to intervene here. After taking a beating for five rounds, that is Fireman Jim Flynn, the challenger decides to accomplish what his fist cannot do. So he starts kind of kangarooing or turning into a goat. It actually is a technique called ram butting from the early keelboat days. So Flynn, who is shorter than Johnson, starts leaping and attempting to drive his skull into Johnson's jaw. We're not talking where we see sometimes accidental headbutts or where we see nodders where it's actually intentional headbutts, but trying to be disguised. There's no disguising it. The guy is just literally leaping and trying to do as much harm as possible. Excuse me there. Again, there's numerous reprimands from the referee, Ed Smith, and pleas from his own handlers. But you get your own corner saying, "Hey, man, cut it out." But no, he just kept doing it and kept doing it until the authorities stopped the fight in the ninth round. Johnson takes off. He's just fine. Next round, you got it between two of my favorite fighters, but one of my favorite times is Stanley Ketchel. This is the Ketchel versus Billy Papke, their second fight together, September 7th, 1908. When middleweight champion Ketchel offered to shake hands at the beginning of the round, Papke just fakes him out right there before the opening bell, fires a punch and breaks Ketchel's nose. Now, within minutes, Ketchel's eyes are puffed up like plums, can't see, remain blinded, a pathetic figure for the rest of that fight until Papke dropped him in the 11th. You know, Papke was now the new champion thanks to one of the most fiendish sucker punches in history. Next fight, let's talk about, go to April 20th, 1960, probably one of the latest on my list, is Gene Fulmer versus Joey Girardello. Okay, this is a bitter, bitter 15-round draw, and it remains memorable for the violent headbutting duel that took place in this fourth round. After being butted several times by Fulmer, Girardello lowered his head like a mountain ram and starts charging forward. He splits Fulmer's forehead open, nearly knocking him down. Referee, this is Harry Kessler, steps in to warn the fighters and allow them time for a little bit cooler heads to prevail. And the rest of the bout was marked by more generic, you know, roughhousing, usually what you see. But the action of the fourth round had already, you know, take that fight to a very dark place. in boxing history. I know that boxing columnist Hack Miller at the time observed when you took a look at Kessler's clothes, who was the referee, he was drenched in blood. Looks like he had, quote, had just killed and cleaned his first elk, unquote. Let's go back to the old days again. 1923, January 1st, Harry Greb, wonderful fighter, versus Bob Roper. Now, Greb was one of the dirtiest fighters of the era, but he met his match in Roper. We don't know if it's the other way around there. Their sixth meeting fought in Greb's hometown of Pittsburgh saw Roper go below and beyond his usual tactics. At one point, choking Greb with his open glove. So we don't have him. Now we got the thumb stitched together. Now that goes. And bending him over the ropes as if to snap him in half. The fighters paid zero attention to the referee, who was Jock Henninger, gotta love that name, who was struck several times while trying to separate them. Not even the final bell of this, no decision bout could stop them as Greb and Roper kept swinging until several cops had to leap in the ring and break them up. Greb was temporarily suspended while Roper was banned from fighting in Pittsburgh. Man, oh man, the wild old days, right? The next one makes the list, 1939, November 15, 1939, Tony Galento versus Lou Nova. Now, if you know who two-ton Tony Galento, you've seen him short, kind of squatty frame. Got some power to you. He wasn't going to dazzle you with jabs and footwork. Galento's favorite 1-2 combination was a headbutt followed by a thumb. I mean, Nova tried to accommodate Galento's plug-ugly style, but he liked Galento's genius for barroom tactics, and Nova finally succumbed in the 14th round. And the Ring magazine has called this bout disgraceful and chastised the referee, George Blake, for not disqualifying Galento. It is a disgraceful fight. Ain't nothing pretty about it, but, man, these guys are just going for it. Like I said, this is part one. I'll give you more of the dirtiest fights, in my opinion, down the road here. But let's go ahead and talk about How to Foul, a.k.a. Street Boxing 1920 Style, which is our newest volume in the our Black Box Brotherhood series, you know, which is if you join up with that, you get the DVD, you get the printed syllabi, and boom, you got a whole month of training in this old school stuff. And again, the topic again is this kind of old school fouling fight. And we'll be talking about, covered will be the root of the foul, meaning what foul we're looking to bring out, all the drills that lead to fouling well, if such a thing is considered kosher. And we'll discuss briefly how to hide the fouls, as if we're talking historical context here, because we all want to be gentlemen and sportsmen, right? But how to hide the fouls in case you were actually trying to hide it as they did in the old days. But most of the time, we're going to spend just getting the fouls correct so we can snag a little of that historical meanness. But really, we're just trying to make it street ready from the jump. Only one foul is, in this particular piece of material, is glove dependent. It'd probably crack your hands up if you weren't wearing the glove. The rest of them are immediately street ready. I'd personally weight all the other fouls higher, excuse me, because they inflict maximum hell with minimum damage to our dainty selves. A mini list of what's included in the volume would be, well, and I'll give you a link so you can actually take a look at the an expurgated list of the what we're including on there. But there's tons of stuff: jab chops and scalding the chops, boxers chanceries, folded jabs, shoulder bucking, on and on and on in there. Even the rabbit punch, we're actually stealing Louis Firpo style, which is the most effective one I've ever come across in the world. And if you're kind of curious what we're doing here, again, the Black Box Project is all the historical sorts of fighting. It's just not in the boxing. It's just not wrestling. It's old school frontier rough and tumble. There's weapons work. There's unarmed. There's tomahawk. We're actually whatever future, very close to future upcoming volumes called The Art of the Buffalo, which is actually all about CQB firearm work. It's talking about how the butts and the rakes and the pokes, the pras, the slaps, and trigger punching. It's everything to use the firearm that was not used to actually use it as a firearm yet. And it's a surprisingly common thing at the time. We will be demoing it with a six gun, but by all means, you can do it with a semi-auto, your carry of choice. You're going, why would you need this? Close quarters, you don't want to bring someone down. I mean, there were so many people who were doing this constantly. I mean, Wyatt Earp was actually more known for smacking people with his gun in many crazy ways than actually firing the damned thing. But this was super common material. It's fun historically, but it's also super fun for that close, tight CQB position. And again, a lot of our stuff is combat, and some of it's like, you know, strike tactical. We've actually got coming up kind of soon is we're talking about working on the night tactics. We're talking about ways to increase night vision. We're taking this from the historical record, actually taking it from the Eastern Woodlands tribes. We're talking about you get night, plus you've got the ever present forest here. I can vouch for what we got remaining here in the Appalachians, the techniques, the tactics. Nighttime stalking and skullduggery. It's absolutely wonderfulness. So anyway, there's a lot going on here with the program. And it's boxing, wrestling. Yes, that is the root. But out of that comes a lot of this frontier yumminess. If it sounds like it's interesting to you, well, head over to extremeselfprotection.com or take a look at the link in the show notes. You can see more information there. Go to our blog, Indigenous Ability. I'll put the link there as well, so you can actually see thousands of pages of history and science of these old school ways, including our old school conditioning. This sort of material helped me whip myself in the best shape of my life. Not saying maybe your life. You might be a major hoss stud out there, but 58, serving me pretty well. Other than that, though, if you like the podcast, please like, support, share the podcast. Helps me out, brothers and sisters. Take care of yourself. Well, if you dig what we just discussed today, I'd like to invite you to like and subscribe to the podcast. Hell, support it if you want. I'm not your dad. Do what you want. And if you're a glutton for punishment, just visit our website, extremeselfprotection.com. You'll find links to the blog, all of our products, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of more pages of like musings.